This is Festival Showcase, a weekly program exclusively on Aspen Public Radio, where we talk to the musicians, composers, conductors, and the movers and shakers from the Aspen Music Festival and School during the festival season. And today, just a follow-up. That's every Friday at 2:30 p.m. during the season. I'm your host, Chris Moore. Funding for a Festival Showcase on Aspen Public Radio is generously provided by the Barnard Fane Foundation. We have two post-season interviews today with a total of six people. We'll talk with four talented young conductors from the Aspen Conducting Academy. But first, let's chat with Alan Fletcher and Asador Santurian about the season that just ended, as well as the Beethoven birthday bash coming up next summer. Well, Alan and Asador, I always appreciate this opportunity, as the season has come to an end, to just talk about it just a little bit. The season sometimes goes by with such intensity and ferocity that we can hardly even catch our breath, but we're able to now, finally. Are there any things that either of the two of you would like to kind of start with as far as some of the things that really stood out for you this season, whether it be concerts or special events or things like that?
I think the recitals were particularly strong this year, and we had things like Lugansky and Augustin Hadlich and Baratti, George Lee. Mm-hmm. These were spectacular efforts.
I would have to say that Seung-jin Cho, the guy that played Rachmaninoff's second, not a piece that I need to hear again after all these years, yeah. So many times, but he convinced me that there was still a lot left in there to hear, and that was pretty
absolutely.
Impressive.
And actually, I thought Lugansky's Wachpag was also very
yes.
fresh.
And Christoph Baratti was a violinist like I'd never quite heard before. It's amazing to hear some of the new artists that come in. Asador, how involved are you in actually finding the artists that audiences may not know here, the ones you bring in from Europe or something?
Well, I would say pretty much involved in identifying talent that mm-hmm. could stand next to the legends that the festival is known for and the current high standards of our visiting artists. And it's a pleasure to be involved in that mm-hmm. process. And I'm very, 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 very grateful to the community and my colleagues who always support these debuts.
I believe there's a connection, but like the audience says, I'm going to take a chance on this artist that I don't know, and it'll be at least 3/4 or 7/8 full in the hall, which is great for a first-timer.
Yes, Baratti had a very, very strong presence in the audience, as well as George Lee and some of our other debuting artists with orchestras.
Mm-hmm. There is some very, very serious music that gets played every summer at the festival, but I will have to say that there were a few times when I just felt such joy, the Bach multiple piano concerti with mm-hmm. all the young pianists up there jumping back and forth from piano to piano, Theophanidis' drum circles, the symphonic dances of Rachmaninoff with Joyce Yang and Conrad Tau. There were several like that. As programmers, do you think in terms of blending that the joyous aspects of music with the more serious aspects? Because there certainly seems to be that kind of balance.
We do. We joke about a board member who said about a year ago, there should be fun in our concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually made that part of our planning process. And
oh, good.
Every once in a while, looking at a program would say, oh, this is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think that way now? It's actually great when a board member comes up with an idea that actually falls into place into the programming.
Yeah.
Yes, programming is also a reflection of the artist's nature. Obviously, they're all mature and serious, but they have aspects to their personalities that they're drawn to works that demonstrate and voice that.
Right. And I'm not necessarily even thinking of humoring. The Bach piano concerti and multiple piano concerti aren't exactly funny, but they're just an awful lot of fun to watch.
Well, a number yeah. of people in the audience told us that that program especially felt like old Aspen programming,
hmm.
where we presented students in mm-hmm. a public concert in a very serious way, because it was a major presentation of three extraordinarily gifted pianists who have studied here, and all of them studied with Arya Vardy, who was leading the evening, as well as other of our piano faculty.
Now, another aspect of the festival that I think is becoming more and more accepted by the larger audience is the major contemporary composers that come in. Certainly, this year I'd say Chris Theophanidis got the loudest applause mm-hmm. with his drum circles, and everyone had a blast listening to that. Anna Tolvard's daughter mm-hmm. had a piece that was very, very well received as well. And so when you are choosing living composers to place on the Sunday afternoon concert or one of the main stage performances, are you pretty careful to try to cultivate something that you think that can really speak to the audience?
Well, yes. I think the basis there is what Robert Spano has done in Atlanta with the Atlanta School, mm-hmm. which was a more than 10-year effort to connect the audience in a really deep way, in a repeated way, mm-hmm. with composers who had an explicit desire to be connected to mm-hmm. their audience.
Mm-hmm. You have two composers who were teaching very extensively, Stephen Harkey and Chris Theofanidis, and they obviously have that kind of aesthetic, maybe not an aesthetic, but at least an ethos, I guess you might say,
yes,
for connecting to audience, connecting to conductors, to musicians. And that hasn't always been the case. Your composition students this year, who I hardly even want to call students because mm-hmm. I feel like they had amazing mastery of orchestration, for example, and did some incredible things that I never thought were possible with orchestra. But these students seem to have a similar general ethos, even though their styles are very, very different individually. And in my mind, the biggest challenge that the Aspen Music Festival faces with its audience right now is to try to convince more people to come to these student recitals for the composition. I thought they were extraordinary this year.
Yeah, I agree. And the orchestra reading program that we have for the composition program is also really absorbing and interesting. And the people who come to it report that they think it's one of the most interesting things that we do.
You had a winner of the Hermitage Prize. Can we talk about the winner this year, Chelsea? And
yeah, Chelsea Komschlis, very, very gifted composer. She just had a major work with Alarm Will Sound, the professional contemporary group. I think we all responded both to her orchestral writing and her chamber writing in a deep way.
Her Sunrise piece, and I don't remember what the name of it was, it was with orchestra, and it started very texturally and reminded me a lot of kind of walking in the almost dark prior to dawn, and then all of a sudden when dawn rises, the music becomes tonal and melodic, and it was quite effective, and I was listening to that and saying there's a lot more maturity in here than I would have expected from somebody of her age.
Yeah, I commented to her that I got Pines of the Appian Way at the beginning of that piece and then Zarathustra at the end.
I definitely got Zarathustra at the end. Here's what we should do, Asador. We should charge $50 and make it a special event to go to one of those concerts, and then maybe more people will come.
The audience for that workshop is growing. Mm-hmm. I was very, very pleased to see a number of folks who have mm-hmm. been attending. Alan certainly talks it up throughout the entire summer at his high notes and mm-hmm. Every opportunity that presents itself. He certainly talks about it. We all talk about that destination point in the summer because it truly is a highlight.
And one of the ways that it seems to be a highlight to me is that I walk in the door and there's Robert Spano, there's Asador, there's Alan, the very, very top people who are the executive directors, as it were, of the festival are there showing their support. And I think that's, of course, and the composing teachers are there too.
Yeah.
As the different orchestras on last week on Tuesday and then on Wednesday and then on Friday and finally on Sunday disband and put on their final concerts, I was reminded of the Tibetan Buddhists and their sand mandalas that just get kind of blown away. And it almost seems like at the end of each season, I notice a lot of the audience members, myself included, get kind of anxious, like, oh my God, it's going, the sand is blowing everything away. These orchestras, for example, in some ways I feel like each year they develop a little bit slightly different character about mm-hmm. them, depending on who the conductors are and things like that. Do you actually have any memories of orchestras gone by, or does it all kind of blur together because there's so many different ones over the years?
That's very interesting. I definitely do, with the personnel in the Friday and Sunday orchestra, mm-hmm. have very distinct memories. So that was the year Alex Carr was concertmaster all summer. We did feel that the Conducting Academy Orchestra had a very strong spirit this mm-hmm. year, and the Wednesday Aspen Philharmonic had a tremendous work ethic, and watching their rehearsal cycles, they would move a huge distance week after week mm-hmm. from start to finish.
One of the surprises, Wednesday, I've always thought of that, and it's the all-student orchestra. Mm-hmm. And so I did not expect this, but when they played Sibelius's First, Karen and I looked at each other and said, that is as good as any performance of Sibelius one I've ever heard anywhere. It was stunning. It was raised to a level that I never dreamed that they'd be able to pull off.
Well, I think the mentorship program that mm-hmm. that orchestra houses is specifically created to give opportunities to strings who are looking for leadership opportunities to mm-hmm. develop those skills, both on stage and out of the side of the audience in sectionals. They lead sectionals mm-hmm. of their individual sections. There are two mentors per section, so one is leading from the front, the other one is working throughout the section with students who need maybe a little more attention, a little more specificity of direction. And that happens every week in the preparation. Every program mm-hmm. is vetted that way. And the winds, brass, percussion, harp have their own mm-hmm. sectional, but with the conductor of the week or with a staff conductor. The whole idea of that orchestra is to provide opportunity for the students to perform at mm-hmm. top level with top conductors and soloists, but the mentorship program is the extra added plus, which aids mm-hmm. in the execution that you so nicely described week in and week out. And these programs are not easy. I mean, they...
No. Oh, no, I mean, the program with Wynton Marsalis Violin Concerto and Copland Third Symphony, you know, the Berlin Philharmonic would be challenged to host
yes.
that program.
Yeah. Exactly. They're really so big ones. I want to end by talking about, and Alan, I want to thank you again for coming in a few weeks ago, right after the announcement of Renee Fleming coming in and Patrick Summers to direct the opera program next year. What can we expect? I know we've got The Magic Flute and The Grapes of Wrath as the mm-hmm. two main stage operas. Is anything happening with Fidelio, just out of curiosity, since that's Beethoven?
I'm pretty sure there will not be Fidelio on the season. I'm also pretty okay. sure there will be opera in the tent, and so you'll have to stay tuned and see what we surprise you with on that. I think the Saturday morning scenes are going to have a familiar, wonderful aspect, as they always do, and Ed mm-hmm. Berkeley giving acting coaching, but we're also going to introduce more music theater and even art song and arias to those programs, with Renee and Patrick taking a strong role, as they did this season, in fact.
And I'm not sure if it was Alan, but somebody gave you, Asador, a lot of credit for the fact that there's more vocal music weaving itself into the programming, say on the Saturday afternoon chamber concerts, things like that. Can we expect more of that next year too, more vocal?
Well, yes, it's always been there. I'm glad it's finally being noticed, but I think we do...
It seems to have been increased, though, not just...
Perhaps, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but we've always done a good service to vocal music, because in the world at large, it's disappearing. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely a genre that Renee and Patrick are going to instill in their concept for the new constituted Aspen Opera Theater and Vocal mm-hmm. Arts Program. So it will continue to be present in our programming with this added attention by Renee and Patrick.
Well, Alan, Asador, I want to thank you both again for coming in and for really a great season. I was surprised to hear how many people claim and swear this is the best season ever of all time. Mm-hmm. You can't really comment on that, I know, but I know it was a great season, and thank you for all the work that the two of you did to make that happen.
Well, thanks for your work, Chris.
We just talked with both the president and the vice president of the Aspen Music Festival and School, Alan Fletcher and Asador Santurian, about last season and next season. Alan Fletcher has also had two of his compositions featured on the Aspen Music Festival program this season. Let's listen to a little of his music to wind this part of the program down. Now let's talk with four talented young conductors from the Aspen Conducting Academy. You'll be hearing from Benjamin Manis, Mauro Mariani, Sasha Skolnick-Brauer, and Katharina Wincor. First of all, I want to congratulate all four of you and your colleagues for what seems to us as audience members to be a very, very successful conducting season again. The orchestra sounds wonderful. It's great to have the four of you in here to talk a little bit about how one learns how to conduct. Can any of you answer the question, how long has conductor training gone on? Because I know the stories of people like Georg Schulte and some major conductors of that time, and it's just like they kind of pushed their way onto the podium, and they were very good musicians, and the ones that had the chops got to stay there. But how did people used to learn how to conduct, and how is it different now with you all?
Well, this program here in Aspen is very unusual in that most of us are not pianists. Katharina is a pianist.
Mm-hmm. But we've got a bunch of cellists
here. But Ben and Mauro and I are all cellists. Mm-hmm. And the philosophy behind the conducting program here in Aspen is that we play in the orchestra when we're not conducting. So mm-hmm. we are members of the orchestra. In Europe, at least, it used to always be that conductors started out as pianists. They were rehearsal pianists for the opera houses. Eventually, they would start conducting performances. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of unique, or at least divergent from that European tradition, and a nice chance for us to be a part of the music making when the others are conducting.
I also want to ask, which of you has many languages under your belts? Because it would seem to me as though if you want to be conducting somewhere besides the United States, you should know perhaps Italian or even Russian or who knows what. Who here is multilingual?
Mauro the most.
Yeah.
Mauro, how many languages can you speak?
Fluently, I speak English, German, Italian, and Spanish.
Uh-huh. And you can creep along with the Ukrainian orchestra or something, maybe, or...
Yes.
Wow. That's very impressive. I would be helpless with that.
Yeah. Interestingly, we just had a meeting with Leonard Slatkin when he was here to conduct. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was interesting that he told us is that one of the best things that he did for himself and that he thinks a young conductor can do is to go to a country in which you do not speak any of the language.
Oh, wow.
And have to rehearse the orchestra and work with the musicians, because that forces you to take care of everything you need to take care of with your hands, without having mm-hmm. to stop because you can't talk.
That would scare me if I were
up on it. It's daunting, yes.
I could just imagine.
What we have to do quite often, because yes. with school we usually go to Czech Republic or to Bulgaria or somewhere, mm-hmm. and of course we try to speak as little as possible because
right.
not everyone would understand.
For those of us that were lucky enough to grow up in Denver, Colorado, we had several conductors that made a big impression on us. First, we had Antonia Brico, and she ended up conducting her own symphony. Of the next generation, we had Joanne Folletta of the Denver Chamber Orchestra at that time, and Marin Alsop of the Colorado Symphony. I'm sure you're familiar with all of those. But my question to you, Katerina, is, are you still facing that challenge, or are we finally getting over the idea that a woman conductor is not really any different from a woman cellist or something?
I personally came to the solution that there is no big difference.
Well, of course.
I think there are people who have more problems, but the thing is, if there are institutions or orchestras, schools who are a little bit more reserved towards this idea, then I don't really know them because I would not be in contact with them,
right,
obviously.
Right.
Yeah, that's my subjective view on that. I always had enough chances to conduct or to have master classes and that sort of stuff, so I don't have a problem there.
Now, all of you are working with Robert Spano and also others that come in, like you said, Leonard Slatkin, you mentioned. Tell us a little bit about how, you know, it's pretty obvious when you're going to a master class for a singer or for a violinist or something like that, there are certain techniques that you just have to have. You have to be in tune and you have to play all the right notes, etc. But when it comes to conducting, it seems to me as though it's a little bit more ethereal and there's a wider range of styles of conducting. Can some of you address that question of what is it that you have been needing to learn in order here and also in other places, wherever you come from, where you've been studying conducting as well?
Well, I think you're certainly right about that. Of course, each violinist is different, but at the end of the day, there are some things you have to do the same to play the violin.
Mm-hmm.
That is true of conducting too, but you look at five famous conductors and they can look completely different from one another. I mean, one of the things that I think is great for all of us about Mr. Spano when he teaches is that he is very much aware that each of our bodies is different mm-hmm. and that we're all mm-hmm. going to look different from each other and especially from him.
Mm-hmm.
And his philosophy is sort of, if it works, it works. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't necessarily subscribe to one particular school in terms of technique or what you have to do or anything like that. So for us, it's really a process of exploring what works within our own physical framework, within our own experience. And the fact that we have, you know, an orchestra here which is dedicated to learning with us makes that possible.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to comment on that too? What are the things that you're learning here in Aspen, but also perhaps in other places, Juilliard or wherever you're studying the rest of the year?
For me, the wonderful thing about conducting is that you can and maybe should be learning everything you can. And there's mm-hmm. no limit to that. It can be languages, it can be reading philosophy, it can be studying other kinds of music. And for me, that's very inspiring as well as very challenging. Being here in Aspen is a nice chance to do particular kind of work on our time with the orchestra. And so a lot of what we do here during these 2 months is just figuring out how to work with them, how to feel the music physically, and how to get what we want. Whereas maybe during the year we spend our time a little differently, also exploring the other options. It's a very special opportunity to have an orchestra just to work with the conductors, and so we want to take advantage of that as much as possible.
They say the rehearsal is the most important part, more important than the performance itself. How in God's name do you have the time with limited rehearsal to get an orchestra to really coalesce and gel, or have they already done a lot of that work for you before you even step to the podium?
Well, I think that people in the audience sometimes think that everything the orchestra is doing is because of the conductor.
Right.
But actually, the conductor can influence only a few percentage of what the orchestra is doing.
Sure.
And if you have more rehearsal time, then you can hope for more percentage to achieve of your ideals. But if the rehearsals is only like one, like we saw yesterday with Mahler 7 and Robert Spano, he had only 3 days for rehearsing a really big program. Then your approach is much different to the rehearsal, because you are concerned more that everybody is playing at the same time and not going different ways. There is a hierarchy of important things which you need to do, like dynamics and ensemble. So there is less space for personal and subjective interpretation.
I think a nice way of thinking about it is that our job as a conductor is to allow every member of the orchestra to play their best. And that is really our goal, is to get the best quality we can from everybody, because each member of the orchestra is extraordinarily well-trained and thoughtful. And so in our short time, whatever it is, we want to help them to kind of maximize their success. And that can be, as Mauro was saying, with in terms of ensemble or in terms of some sort of cohesive emotional quality. But really, that's our goal at the end of the day.
To that point, I mean, that's the goal of every conductor and always has been. I'm old enough to remember George Sell conducting, and he was a tyrant. And certainly, I know the reputations of people, Toscanini and others. Even today, there are some conductors that still take the tyrannical approach. How are you being encouraged in terms of how you work, in a sense, personally or interpersonally on a professional level with your orchestra members?
I think there's a big focus now on how we speak to the people and that we are all on the same level personally. And also, we all have to accept that usually when we conduct something, it might be the first or the second time that we do it. And most of the orchestra players have done it for a couple of years or decades. So anyways, we would have more respect because of that. But I think that nowadays, usually you cannot speak to the orchestra like a couple of decades ago. But also, as we see in politics, there are many people who like to have leaders who really talk in a direct way. And so I don't know, maybe it's not development in one direction, but it will go in waves up and down. And yeah, let's see.
I also want to ask just about, you made a very brief political statement, and I wanted to talk about some of the things that conductors do. One of my friends is a conductor. He was a conductor of a small city orchestra and really wanted to make a splash somehow, and he was talking to me about it. I encouraged him to just kind of get out into the world and do things just because it's a good thing to do. This was way back when the Berlin Wall fell, and he did some concerts in honor of the newly freed Eastern European countries, and he played Beethoven's Ninth, like right at the wall and things like that, and he got on National Public Radio, and he also raised a lot of money for orchestra musicians who couldn't even afford the strings to replace the broken strings. Do any of you have ambitions besides the purely professional ambitions to do something with the position that you're going to be having in the world as conductors, to also be role models or to offer your support for certain charities or anything like that?
Absolutely. I think we all today have to be aware of the fact that classical music has always been a relatively conservative and maybe one would even say elitist area, just because in order to become successful or to get involved, it usually requires significant financial support. So I think each of us has to be aware that today we need to go above and beyond to try and address the problems of diversity in classical music and the problems of programming in that respect, because culturally and societally, we can't think that classical music is isolated.
I would also mention that, of course, a lot of conductors are now conducting more pops concerts proportionally, you know, music of diverse backgrounds, so it's not just that. Anybody else have any comments on that, of ways in which you may want to step forward in the communities that you serve in other ways besides just being a great conductor?
That's a really interesting and good question that you ask, and it's something that I've sort of struggled with for a while. It has always seemed to me that being a classical musician is in some ways sort of a selfish profession. And I think all of us here would certainly agree that we personally have been helped by classical music, and that has made an enormous impact in our lives, as it has hopefully in so many more. But if your goal truly is to make the world a better place, surely there are better ways to do it than being a musician.
Yeah, and I think we have to avoid the danger and the pitfall of thinking I'm an artist, quote unquote, and thus I'm automatically doing good for the world, when really we also have to be aware that there are real problems that we need to adjust altogether, even as we are musicians, that may have nothing to do with music making.
Right, right, exactly. Last year, Alan Fletcher told us that all of the Conducting Academy former students now have careers as conductors, which was stunning to me. How do the people at the Aspen Music Festival and School, or perhaps at the other schools that you're going to, actually help you get a place in the conducting world once you're finished with your training? If they have that level of success here, means that they got to be helping you somehow. No?
I wish we could get that in writing.
Yeah.
But inevitably, the connections we make here and the people you meet, you will see for many years and for our whole lives. There's no fast track to becoming a conductor and no one path, so it's never as simple as going to the next step automatically, but certainly the training and the experience we gain here is kind of an invaluable way for us to know how to proceed and what we want to do.
Can any of you speak to the different styles that the four of you have as conductors? I know when I hear you conducting a four-movement symphony, for example, on a Tuesday, that if I were to close my eyes, it would seem like a fairly unified interpretation, which is really surprising to me. But I don't really think that that's true about you all. So are some of you more classically inclined and like, I'm going to study that score very, very carefully, and then some of you like the raving Leonard Bernstein types? I mean, do you have different...
Sasha's a raving Leonard Bernstein type.
I think we all have our own ideas, but the thing is that we are all in the same room with one program for 1 week, and so to a certain degree, the ideas that we have, let's say, four people do four movements of one symphony, they kind of get unified. For example, right now we are working on a classical program and we are working with the orchestra on certain classical techniques. And of course, we would not say, let's do that only in the third movement, but we try to have some an idea of sound that works for the whole piece. But that doesn't mean that we have to agree on everything that a conductor from another movement does. We still have our own ideas, that's for sure.
Right. We certainly don't get together and talk about these kinds of things.
We would discuss over lunch certain things. But, I mean, in the end, the conductor has their idea. And
right.
So,
either of you guys?
I mean, it's a nice part of being in such a rich group of young conductors. I don't think we could at this point ever pinpoint, oh no, Mauro is very much this way and Ben is this way. Sure, we have differences, but in some ways there are also still musical values that we all hold to be true about what makes good music making. And generally that has to do with finding what the composer meant when he wrote something in the score. And that is basically our number one priority. And after that, maybe some things of personal taste come into play. But generally we all can agree on some basic tenets of good music making.
Are any of you finishing your studies now with the end of the Aspen Music Festival and School and then launching off into your careers? Or are some of you still planning maybe next year to come back to Aspen or to continue at Juilliard or the other schools that you're at?
Mauro and I both have more school. Ben and Katarina are both starting jobs.
I have both. I have to go to school and to start the job in two different continents. I don't know what I will do.
But I'll tell you a story about Joanne Folletta, the conductor then, because she had three different orchestras in two continents. And so in her hotel room, she had this triangular thing, and it would say Denver, Buffalo, Paris, or whatever the three cities were. And so she would wake up and she would look at that and she'd know what city she was in and which orchestra she was working for.
Yeah.
So that could happen to you if you're successful. Get one of those if you need to. I want to thank all four of you, really, for making the time to come out here. It is wonderful to be able to talk to you after watching you all season. And we look forward, of course, to next year, at least maybe some of you coming back. And thank you for letting us know more about what it is to be a conductor at this stage of your lives.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Benjamin Manis, Mauro Mariani, Sasha Skolnick-Brauer, and Katarina Wincor, four talented young conductors from the Aspen Conducting Academy. A reminder for next year, you can hear a free, full-length symphony concert every Tuesday at 4 at the Tent, led by members of the Aspen Conducting Academy. This has been Festival Showcase, a weekly program exclusively on Aspen Public Radio, where we talk to the musicians, composers, conductors, and the movers and shakers from the Aspen Music Festival and School during the festival season, Fridays at 2:30 p.m. Funding for a Festival Showcase on Aspen Public Radio is generously provided by the Barnard Fane Foundation. Betsy Schwarm is assisted with editing. I'm your host, Chris Moore. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll tune in next year. It's almost 3 o'clock and it's time for Marketplace. This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting at KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale.